This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the evening edition. I'm Uma Pagan Ampike Pagan.
Today, after 2 years of negotiations, the United States, together with our international partners, has achieved something that decades of animosity has not. A comprehensive, long-term deal with Iran that will prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon. This deal demonstrates that American diplomacy can bring about real and meaningful change. Change that makes our country and the world safer and more secure. This deal is also in line with a tradition of American leadership. It's now more than 50 years since President Kennedy stood before the American people and said, "Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate."
10 days ago, in an early morning appearance at the White House that was broadcast live in Iran, President Barack Obama announced that Iran and a group of six nations led by the United States had reached a historic accord to significantly limit Tehran's nuclear ability. The deal culminates 20 months of negotiations on an agreement that President Obama had long sought as the biggest diplomatic achievement of his presidency. Whether it portends a new relationship between the United States and Iran after decades of coups, hostage-taking, terrorism and sanctions remains a bigger question. To help us make sense of what it all means, the ins and outs of the deal, the political wrangling that is still to come and what the future holds, I'm joined today by Joseph Cirincione.
Sure. I'm Joe Cirincione. I'm president of Plowshares Fund, a global security foundation that's focused on nuclear policy. We give money to groups that are working to reduce and eliminate the threat of nuclear weapons. And over the last few years, our main focus has been on Iran, which many consider to be the greatest nuclear threat in the world.
So, Joe, we spoke last October, and during our conversation, you said that a deal was close. You were incredibly optimistic and confident that a deal was close. Since that time, you've said very similar things in a lot of your public events. And correct me if I'm wrong, but even reading the reports of that, there seemed to be a lot of eye rolling in that very few people believed you when you told them that a deal was close.
That's true. People were very cynical about this deal. In countries all over the world, many of them don't trust Iran. Many don't trust the United States. Many thought this was just a cynical ploy on the part of the leaders of those countries. But some people thought that Russia would never go along with this and would kill the deal. But I spent a lot of time talking to the U.S., European, and Iranian negotiators and knew that the basic outline of a deal was settled pretty early on. Everybody knew what the essence of a deal was, and everybody was willing to accept it. The pain, what took so long, was in the details. Exactly how many centrifuges would Iran destroy? Or what would be the terms of the inspections? How soon could Iran get sanctions relief? And it was those details that took, about twice as long as I thought it would to hammer out a final deal.
So what were the negotiations like? Because this was 2 years in the making. And in the final run-up, we heard lots of stories of shouting matches between John Kerry and the lead negotiator for Iran, for example.
Yeah, well, in the beginning, in the first meeting, September 26, 2013, the first time a U.S. Secretary of State had ever met with the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran, that was at the U.N., and that started the process going. They hammered out in those meetings the basic concept of the negotiations. They got started in earnest almost right away. And by November of 2013, they had an interim agreement. And that was the first agreement that actually stopped Iran's nuclear program since the failed effort by Iran to negotiate a deal back in 2003, 2005. You may remember, Iran wanted to negotiate a deal years ago. They had come to the United States and the European Union suspending their program and offering a complete deal to talk about all the issues, not just the nuclear issue, but their relationship with their Sunni Arab neighbors, their relationship with Israel. But the Bush administration wasn't interested. They did not want to negotiate with Iran. The philosophy was expressed by Vice President Dick Cheney. "We don't negotiate with evil," he said. "We defeat it." And so they spurned the negotiations, and Iran went from a couple of dozen centrifuges to thousands of centrifuges by the time the Bush administration left office. So the Obama administration found the right combination of force and diplomacy, froze the program back in November 2013. And then since then, it's been the agreements that have steadily, comprehensively now rolled back the program, will freeze it for 10 years, and then slowly thaw it out over another 15 years, all of which should make it virtually impossible for Iran to get a nuclear weapon anytime in the next 25 years.
Which is going to bring me to my next question. I remember President Obama, I think it was either in his acceptance speech or his inauguration speech, when he said this great line about how we'd reach out a hand if they unclench their fists.
Yeah, this was in the inauguration. It was on that cold January day. I was on the Mall. There was over a million people in that inauguration. I was on the Mall and I heard him say that. "We extend the hand of friendship if you will unclench your fist." You know, it's that Obama poetry, the way he talks. And at that time, the leader of Iran was Ahmadinejad, and he did not want to unclench his fist. His power base was based on the Revolutionary Guard, on the militants. And he prospered domestically by taking a very tough line against the United States, which he continued for most of his presidency. Towards the end, he shifted as he got weaker and started to try to make a deal with the United States, but he couldn't pull it off. So Obama's view that you have to engage your adversaries, that you should use diplomacy as the lead tool of foreign policy, not the military, that's in stark contrast to the Bush administration and to the neocons who you hear screaming against this Iran deal. But it looks like this diplomatic effort not only has it succeeded, but I think it's the more you read about this deal, the more you learn about this deal, the stronger it appears, and the greater will be the support for it in this country, although it's going to be a tough political fight over the next 60 days.
I'm speaking today to Joe Cirincione about the brand new nuclear agreement between Iran and the United States. After this, I find out just why Congress is so unhappy. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Uma Pagan Ampake Pagan, and this is the Evening Edition. On the 14th of July, Iran, the United States, and five other world powers reached a landmark agreement about the future of Iran's nuclear programs. The agreement that emerged after years of diplomacy and a final marathon negotiating session by top diplomats in Vienna is complex and technical. It is a historic moment, but not everyone is on board. Having faced down Iranian negotiators, President Obama will now face what promises to be an arduous effort to sell the deal to Congress and the American public.
No. The main reason this deal is so controversial in the United States is because of Israel.
That was Joe Cirincione. He is president of Plowshares Fund, a global security foundation, and the author of the book Nuclear Nightmares: Securing the World Before It's Too Late.
To be more specific, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, is waging war against this agreement. He didn't want it. He tried to kill the negotiations. He tried at the last minute, at the very delicate end of the negotiations, to torpedo them. And as soon as the deal was announced, he held a press conference that rivaled the press conference of the President of the United States. And he was denouncing the deal. And as you know, Mr. Netanyahu has a large number of supporters in this country, has considerable political influence. It's actually an unprecedented situation. I don't remember ever seeing the leader of a foreign country wage a campaign that is so extensive, so well-funded, against the national security strategy of the President of the United States. You often have domestic debate, but I've never seen a foreign leader intervene so directly in our national security affairs. It's really It's unprecedented.
So, Joe, give us a rundown about some of the things we need to know. I mean, the document itself is about 109 pages, and it's got these annexes and everything to it. Talk to us about some things that our audience should know about this deal.
Sure. The first thing you need to know is that this will stop Iran from getting a bomb, and it will stop a new war in the Middle East. You know, just 3 years ago, the talk around the world was not when there'd be a war, not if there'd be a war with Iran, but when. Israel was going to attack. We were going to attack. There was tremendous pressure to convince us to go to war with Iran. This deal stops that war. There is not going to be a new war in the Middle East. Iran is not going to get the bomb. This dismantles most of Iran's nuclear capability. Now, remember, they do not have a bomb program. This is not about pulling out scientists who were just about to put the final screws into a bomb. No, they have a civilian program. The problem is much of the capability that they've been building that can make fuel for nuclear reactors can also make fuel for a bomb. The same centrifuges, these machines that spin uranium gas, they can enrich it to low levels for fuel. They can enrich it to high levels for a nuclear bomb. So you want to reduce that capability, and this deal does that. It rips out two-thirds of Iran's centrifuges and then confines the remaining centrifuges to one central location where they will be tightly monitored. Iran will destroy 98% of its stockpile of uranium gas, the stuff that goes in to the centrifuges. Right now, they have enough gas to make, if they wanted to, enough material for about 10 nuclear bombs. This eliminates that, gets it down to a fraction less. They couldn't even make one with the gas they have left. They have to take out the reactor core of their research reactor that could make plutonium, another material for a bomb, take that core out, drill it full of holes, and pour concrete into it. And they're going to build a new core completely configured that doesn't make much plutonium at all, essentially cutting off that path. Now, who does that? I mean, that's why this is such a strong agreement. They have to physically destroy a great deal of their capability. Now, the beauty of this agreement is that the Supreme Leader and the Iranian leaders can go back and say, we have not been forced to dismantle a single building in the infrastructure. Our rights have been respected. We get to continue the program. And that's true.
Because that's the big win for them, right? That they still can continue
enrichment. That's a win. And this is what they were looking for. Yes, that's a win. But they get to keep the buildings. We just move out all the equipment. You know, and so that they do get to continue to enrich uranium. That was the compromise. But it's at a very low level, one that doesn't threaten a quick path to a bomb. Right now, if they wanted to, they could probably make a bomb core enough in about 2 months. This deal stretches it out to a year, and that year continues. That timeline continues for at least 15 years. So they can't rush to a bomb anything shorter than 15 years. And there are other restrictions that last 20, 25 years, basically a whole generation. So the problem of Iran sprinting out to make a bomb is gone for a generation. A lot of change can happen in a generation.
One of the big wins, I guess, for the United States and for the world is that we finally have a comprehensive inspections regime.
This rests on the inspections. This is the toughest inspection regime I've ever seen. I've been doing this for 30 years. This is the best inspection regime I've ever seen. Many agreements don't have any inspection regime. Remember when Muammar Gaddafi in Libya gave up his centrifuges and his chemical weapons negotiated with George W. Bush? Zero verification, no inspection regime. This thing puts international inspectors, not U.S. inspectors, international inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency on site at all of Iran's nuclear facilities with cameras and sensors and seals, not wax seals on parchment paper. These are fiber optic radio seals. If they are breached, if they are tampered with, a signal is sent out instantaneously to the headquarters. It's like an alarm you'd have in your house, except this time the IAEA comes in instead of the cops. Interestingly, the opponents are attacking the inspection system. They're trying to swift boat this. They're going at the most powerful part of the agreement and claiming it's the weakest by saying, wait, it makes inspectors wait 24 days before they can have an inspection. No, this is only in the extreme case. The inspectors get to go everywhere they want, anytime they want, within the declared facilities. But if they suspect that on some remote military base, there's some nuclear work being done, they say, we want to go there. And then like any country, you don't just waltz into somebody's military installation. You have to have a negotiated process, a managed trip. And Iran can only delay that for a maximum of 24 days. So, but at the end of 24 days, if they still won't let you into that facility, bang, they're in violation of the agreement. You're taken back to the UN Security Council. Sanctions go back into place. Now you have a crisis. So this deal lets the inspectors go anywhere they want, anytime they want, within the process of managed access.
I'm speaking to Joe Cirincione. After the news, we get down and dirty with the U.S. Congress. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
This week, together with our allies and partners, we reached a historic understanding with Iran, which, if fully implemented, will prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon and make our country, our allies, and our world safer. This framework is the result of tough, principled diplomacy. It's a good deal, a deal that meets our core objectives, including strict limitations on Iran's program and cutting off every pathway that Iran could take to develop a nuclear weapon. This deal denies Iran the plutonium necessary to build a bomb. It shuts down Iran's path to a bomb using enriched uranium. Iran has agreed that it will not stockpile the materials needed to build a weapon. Moreover, international inspectors will have unprecedented access to Iran's nuclear program, because Iran will face more inspections than any other country in the world.
This is the Evening Edition, and I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. Joining me today is Joe Cirincione. He is president of Plowshares Fund, a global security foundation, and the author of the book Nuclear Nightmares: Securing the World Before It's Too Late. He is helping us make sense of the recent landmark agreement between Iran and the United States concerning the future of Tehran's nuclear program. I'm assuming we'll see this deal come into effect as soon as Congress approves it?
Congress is not going to approve it, and that's the problem. So in the United States, this deal has run into a buzzsaw of opposition. It breaks down to three categories. One is political. The opposition party controls Congress, the Republicans. They do not want to give this Democratic president any victory.
Because he's been having a great month, by the way.
He's been having a great month. He's been having a role accomplishing things outside the Congress, without the Congress. If Barack Obama brought the Congress a cure for cancer, they would reject it. It is that poisonously partisan. So they do not want to give him a victory. So the Republican leadership is lined up, before they even read the agreement, lined up against the deal, denouncing the president. The second opposition you have is ideological. And this is sort of the Benjamin Netanyahu wing. This is the neoconservatives. The same people who tricked us into an unnecessary war with Iraq want us to go to war with Iran. They don't want a deal with the regime. It's not the nuclear weapons that they care about. It's the regime itself. The regime is the problem. The nuclear weapons is just the excuse for attacking the regime, just as weapons of mass destruction were the excuse in Iraq. It was, as Paul Wolfowitz said, it was the one thing we could all agree on. So they don't want the deal. So they are railing against it. Bill Kristol, the head of the Weekly Standard, who led the charge for the war in Iraq, for example. The people at the Israel Project or the Foreign Policy Institute, groups you probably don't know, but these are powerful neoconservative groups here in Washington, very well funded. The third level of opposition is from experts. And I got to tell you something. Oh, in the non-proliferation world, the nuclear policy experts, they are overwhelmingly in favor of this deal. You could line up 100 experts and 95 of them would be in support of this deal. But there are some who disagree. And those 5 out of 100 get trotted out and get given equal say. So every press story is for and against, even though the against is 5 and the for is 95. So there's a bias in the press coverage of this that makes it hard to get the true story out. Those are the levels of opposition.
For the sake of balance, actually, it ends up becoming this massive bias.
Yeah, it's very much like the climate change discussion, where you can always find some scientist who says there's no such thing as climate change, and he will get equal treatment with the 100 scientists who can document there is climate change. So what that means is that Congress has 60 days to approve the deal. It's actually not the deal. This is not a treaty. It doesn't go to the Congress for their approval. But they can review the treaty and then decide the deal and then decide that they want to repeal the president's authority to lift the sanctions. And that's what the vote will be in 60 days. So sometime around September 20th, at the very latest, there will be a vote in the House and the Senate on whether the president can lift the sanctions or not. They will probably vote no. They will say, no, you can't. At that point, the president will veto that legislation. In about 5 days, it will go back to the House and the Senate, and there'll be a vote to override the president's veto. You with me so far?
Yeah.
Then, in order to override a president's veto, you have to get two-thirds. It's not a simple majority. Two-thirds of the House and the Senate. And that's the fight. You know the Republicans are going to defeat the president, but will Democrats join them? Unless Democrats join them in large numbers, they can't win. And I think the president will hold his Democratic Party. There'll be a few defections, but not enough. And the Congress will fail to overturn the president's veto of their bill, and the deal will go into effect sometime around the end of September. And when that happens, when this deal actually goes into effect, when Iran starts to dismantle its facilities, when the sanctions start to be lifted and the money starts to flow into Iran, that is going to be an historic moment. That is going to be the beginning of a new era. It's going to be something to watch.
All politics can be mind-boggling that way. But of course, President Obama said something very interesting in his speech, and he said that the agreement is not built on trust, it's built on verification. And I think that is the golden line. It's not like he's mindlessly trusting a foreign regime.
No, we don't trust Iran. You know, Malaysians don't trust Iran. Other Iranians don't trust other Iranians. This is not about trust. It's about making a deal with clear, definable steps, and then putting in place a system that can verify that those steps are being taken. And if they're not, they can detect those violations so that the parties can take action. That's why the verification part of this agreement is so important. I think the agreement lives or dies on its verification, and it's quite, quite strong. The more people learn about what this system is, the more they'll be in support of this agreement.
That was Joe Cirincione. Coming up, we take a look at the big picture, just what all of this means for the world at large. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. You're listening to the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Paganampike Pagan. On the show today is everything you need to know about the recent landmark agreement between Iran and the United States on the future of their nuclear program. Helping us make sense of all of this is Joe Cirincione, president of Plowshares Fund. So Joe, big picture question, what does it mean for, I guess, U.S.-Iran relations as a whole? Surely this is a step in the right direction.
Well, it certainly is. But, you know, the deal is, it's not about Iran's support for Hamas and Hezbollah, groups that we call terrorists, group that the Palestinians call liberation fighters. It's not about their relationships with Saudi Arabia and the other countries, or their political repression of their own population. This deal is not going to cure cancer. It's not going to help you shed unwanted pounds. It does one thing and one thing only. It stops Iran from getting the bomb. And that is a very big deal. Whatever else Iran does, it's not going to have a nuclear weapon to back it up. But there is now the possibility of other discussions. Think of this as a gateway issue. This opens up the gate to these other conversations, conversations where the U.S. and Iran have overlapping strategic interests. We both want to defeat ISIL, ISIS, Daesh. They're the sworn enemy of Iran. They're our sworn enemy. We're fighting them together right now in Iraq. We both want to stabilize Afghanistan. We both want to end the civil war in Syria. In fact, there are some active talks behind the scenes going on right now between the United States, Russia, and Iran on Syria. So it opens up the possibility of these kinds of exchanges, and that's a completely different dynamic in the Middle East. Plus, you will now see Western commerce streaming into Iran. And that could very well have a very big impact on the lives of the Iranian people. When you saw these crowds deliriously demonstrating in support of the deal that was reached, they weren't demonstrating against the United States. They were celebrating with the United States. They want closer ties. They see this agreement as their ray of hope, as the beginning of change in a society. They want Rouhani, President Rouhani, who negotiated this deal, to now use the power that this victory gives him to start implementing the domestic reforms that he ran on as a presidential candidate but has not yet implemented. So this deal can be a gateway to both new relationships between the U.S. and Iran, a different dynamic that might help resolve some of the big, big conflicts in the Middle East, and the beginning of domestic change and domestic reform in Iran. None of those are guaranteed, but all of them become possible with this deal. And without this deal, none of them would be possible.
And surely this opens the door to some kind of steps towards talking to North Korea as well.
You do now have a model for North Korea. North Korea, in the United States, the way we think of it, is we're always right and all our adversaries are wrong. But if you look at North Korea just for a minute, you see they don't trust us. They think we broke the deal with them, that we're out to destroy them. And a lot of the rhetoric from our leaders and from politicians in the United States is exactly that way. But now they can see that the U.S. is willing to make an agreement with another hostile regime and not overthrow the regime, but come to terms with the regime, respect the regime, allow that regime to get benefits from the deal. It's not a trick. It's a deal. And if you can get that message across to the North Korean leaders, whose country, of course, is in so much worse shape than Iran, you might be able to bring them back to the negotiating table. And if Russia and China see that this negotiating process that they were involved in with Iran works for them, is a viable mechanism, they might be willing to come back to the table or convince North Korea to come back to the table as well. So, yeah, you have a model you can now translate to North Korea. And if you do that, if you now have stopped the Iranian program and you roll back the North Korean program, you're now looking at the end of proliferation, the end of this wave that began 70 years ago with the invention of the atomic bomb that led to one country after another adopting it. Because Iran and North Korea are the only countries left with big, expansive nuclear programs. You stop them, and you stop the threat of new countries getting the bomb, at least countries with dedicated programs. And that is a world historic event.
And from there, we start the whole process of disarmament then.
It then encourages those countries who at least claim that one of the reasons they have nuclear weapons is to stop other countries from getting them. It now reduces the security risk to those countries. And you can start to say, encourage those countries to reduce the numbers that they have. The United States and Russia have 95% of all the nuclear weapons in the world. We have an obscene number of nuclear bombs, 5,000 in our active stockpile, same for Russia. There's no military mission that requires 5,000 hydrogen bombs. We could greatly reduce, and the improvement in the international security situation, particularly the improvement with Iran, possible ripples of improvement with North Korea, should help in those decreases.
Joe, all of this is possible in no small part to your efforts as well, so congratulations to you too.
Well, thank you. We are not. I'm not in government. I work outside government. I work in the media and expert analysis. We fund 50, 60 groups who are working on this, all the way from well-known institutions like the Brookings Institution, down to little grassroots groups like MoveOn.org and others. But all together, we're small individually, but together I think we've had quite an impact on the public's understanding of this process and in building public support. So I'm proud of the work we've done. It's been a pleasure to be part of this historic moment. We just got to bring it home now.
Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
That was Joe Cirincione for a big picture look at nuclear disarmament. Check out his book, Nuclear Nightmares, Securing the World Before It's Too Late. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast, as always, at bfm.my. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.